Your God is really too small. Most of us live with an image of God, and we reason from an image of God that is way, way inadequate. And the problem is that it's not just a question of, this image of God, I've got to enlarge it. The problem is that when you reason and make conclusions in your life based on an inadequate image of God, then you end up at the wrong conclusions. And that can affect your religious life and your relationship with God. So what I'd like to do is to spend some time with you today talking about that and then giving you the only remedy that there is for making sure that that doesn't happen. Let me begin by giving you just a small, silly example, but it's an example that begins already to tell you the direction that I would like to move into. I want you to imagine a little kid, say a little boy, maybe, or a little girl, 6 years old. What grade would that be? First grade or kindergarten? Okay. I don't know anything about schooling for little kids. Let's make him first grader. And yes, I agree. And then this first grader, since it's now the summer, goes up to his mom and he says to his mom, "Mom, do you love me?" And of course the mom says, "Sweetie, you know I love you." And so the kid thinks, and then he says, "Do you really want me to be happy?" The mom says, already a little suspicious, "Yes, you know I want you to be happy." Then he says, "Well, Mom, I can't tell you how much I loved first grade. I loved first grade every morning. I couldn't wait for morning to come so that I could go back to school. I loved first grade. Please, let me go back to first grade. Don't force me to go to second. You would be making me unhappy, and I want to be happy. And you want me to be happy." Now, if you were that mother in that situation, what would you do? Well, any decent mother would try to find a way to help this child to realize that loving him means pushing him into the indignities and suffering of the second grade. And when you push him into that, he is going to be angry. And the reason he's going to be angry is that if you analyze what he's using to make his decision, he has an image of the possibilities of his own happiness and what causes his own happiness. And so inside of his universe, repeating first grade is the only thing he can imagine to be happy. Now, the mother has a much broader understanding of what the horizon of happiness ought to be. And she's in a position to know that she cannot give in to a very constricted understanding of happiness, because that would make her son be literally, over time, a spiritual runt, because he would not be expanding. And so to love him is to try and help him to acknowledge that his imagination is not developed enough to make that decision. Now, he will not agree, because he understands and he trusts his imagination. And he will go kicking and screaming because he thinks that the only vision of happiness is to be found in the first grade. And he cannot go beyond that image, does not have the capacity. The mother does have that capacity. Now, that dynamic that you are seeing right there happens all the time, applied at broader levels, but applied to all of us at different moments in our lives. We pray for things, and we ask God virtually the same thing, even though we may not say it. You go, I know God wants me to be happy. I know God knows how much this means to me. So therefore, and then you ask. And then sometimes, I'm not saying God says no all the time, but sometimes things don't work out the way you thought they should. And people can get very angry at God for not working out life the way that they expected God to work it out. And when that happens, when something doesn't work out the way you really wanted it to, you're going to be presented with a choice. And the choice is, you're either going to trust that God must know better, or you're going to be an angry and a bitter person. And you're going to walk away, and your relationship with God will be damaged for a while until the Holy Spirit gets you over it. To me, if I can go from one extreme to the other, the poster person for this is Mary, the mother of Jesus. One of my favorite things that I enjoy reflecting on is something that is not found in the Bible, but it has to have occurred because of the humanity of Mary. I want you to imagine Mary standing at the foot of the cross. I want you to imagine Mary standing at the foot of the cross. And I want you to imagine what was going through her head, because she was there for 3 hours. Okay, 3 hours. Her son was most probably naked, bloodied all over. And she was up close and personal. The cross in those days was not that big. The cross that Jesus hung on was probably about as high as the top of this plant, which is what, maybe 10 feet? Something like that. Imagine that's the top of the cross. Now, the cross that Jesus carried is not that shape. The cross that Jesus carried was much more like a railroad tie, a railroad beam. Because you see, the Romans didn't want to have to take a big beam enough to hold a human being, and they didn't want to have to dig a hole deep enough to make sure that while the person was tied to the cross, that they wouldn't, the weight of the human being wouldn't tip the cross over, which would be counterproductive. And so what the Romans did is they had poles in these areas that were used for executions. And they may have 10, 20 poles. And all of them sunk pretty deep into the ground so that they would definitely be able to hold the weight of a human being. And so what they did is when a person carried a cross, he actually carried a railroad tie. And he was strapped to it. He wasn't nailed to it yet. He was strapped to it. And it was on the back of his neck. And he would walk with the railroad tie to his execution. And when he reached the place of execution, that's when they would nail him to the cross. And they would, that cross is correct, they would nail him through the wrists. Because if you nail a person through here, it tends to tear. And so you nail them through the wrists. And what happened then is they would probably from behind have a ladder with ropes. And they would hoist the beam and set it at the top like a T, like this. And they would set the beam at the top. Now, why am I going through this? Because Mary standing at the foot of the cross, she would have been here. And Jesus' face would have been right here. Now you could tell, that's up close and personal, okay? That's up close and personal. Now, the reason I'm saying this again to you is, when you have to stand that up close and personal to somebody who is suffering, and you have to do that for 3 hours, what's going through your mind? Not just one thought. I imagined lots of thoughts. Anger, confusion, depression, all kinds of stuff. One of the thoughts that I think went through her mind, because of her humanity, she probably remembered as a little before Jesus was born, that the angel had said, "Blessed are you among women. Blessed are you among women." I think she probably remembered that sentence. And she turned to God and she said, "Is this what you meant by being blessed among women?" And the angel had also said, "Rejoice, O highly favored daughter." Is this the way it all ends? With shaming my son? And any of you, especially those of you who are mothers, you know that you would rather suffer yourself than have to see your own child suffer. Don't you think in some way or another, the devil may not have tempted her to become angry at God? And that at that moment, she probably, because Mary was sinless, doesn't mean she didn't have temptation. Even Jesus had temptations. And so I think that one of the temptations that she endured was the temptation to anger, distrust, and bitterness towards God. What kind of God are you that allows this to happen? How many times have you heard that anyway? With all kinds of stuff. How could God allow this to happen? I don't know if I can believe in God. How could a good God allow this to happen? It would have been very personal for her, as it may be times for you. And if she would have given in, she would have given in to the boundaries of her imagination. She would have given in to, okay, God, for me to be happy, I need this not to happen to Jesus, to my son. You want me to be happy, don't you, God? Well, if you want me to be happy, you wouldn't let this happen to Jesus. Right, God? Any similarities to the first grader? Exactly the same thing as the first grader. And the first grader was tempted to be disillusioned with his mother, as Mary was probably tempted to be disillusioned with God. And that happens to all of us at some time or another. All of us have a very dwarfed image of God. Not a single one of us, me included, have any kind of an idea of who God is. We're always expecting that God will behave according to the image that we have of him. That bad things are not going to happen to us because I go to church. That bad things only happen to bad people. And we do that periodically, don't we? What did I do that this is happening? Why is God punishing me? Was God punishing Mary? Didn't do anything. And not only that, Jesus himself. Can you imagine if he would have said, what did I do? What did I do that I should have to endure this? Can you imagine if Jesus would have thought like we do? Father, this is Jesus. Imagine Jesus thinking, Father, you love me, right? Yes, my son, you know I love you. You want me to be happy, right? Yes, my son, I want you to be happy. Could we find another way to do this so that I don't have to endure the crucifixion? Doesn't it make sense? Yeah. And God knows we do that all the time. And Jesus actually, because he was human, did exactly that. Do you remember? The Garden of Olives. When Jesus goes and he says, Father, if there is any other way, for me to drink this cup, please, but your will be done. He was asking, no harm in asking. And yet, what did God say? I don't think, by the way, this is just an aside. I don't think God wanted Jesus to be crucified. Even when he said, thy will be done, I think that when he said, thy will be done, that God's will was not that Jesus be crucified, but that Jesus not run. Because you see, what the point was, that if you're threatened with death and you run, that means death would basically have power over God. And what I think God was saying is, You stand. You let them do whatever the hell they are going to do to you. You stand. And don't you run. And that's what Jesus was supposed to do. Let it be. Let it happen. And even if Jesus wouldn't have understood it, he had to do it. Back to Mary. So what choices did she have? What choices did she have? She had bitterness on one choice. But what was the other choice that would not have entailed bitterness and anger and disappointment? The only other choice was for her to trust that God knew what he was doing, even though in her own imagination she could not conceive of a scenario that would require that. I think the Blessed Mother had to stand there and say, Father, I don't understand. This is beyond the pale of understanding. But I trust you. I trust you even though I do not understand. That's the only answer. And what is happening is actually very wise. And why do I say wise? Because the horizon of possibilities that God has in his infinite mind is so far greater than yours as to make yours look laughable. You have no imagination that can even bring you close to the possibilities that God has. He is infinite possibility. We are not. As a matter of fact, there's a church dogma. I always enjoy this. Because it helps me to deal, because I deal with questions like this all the time. And there's a church dogma that was stated in the year 1215. Now, before you think, oh, he remembers good dates, remembers dates. No. I just remember 1215 because that's the time that Mass is during the week here. Okay. But in the year 1215, there was a council, a gathering of bishops, and it was called the Fourth Lateran Council. And the reason it was the Lateran is because it was held in the Lateran Cathedral in Rome, which is called for a family, but that's another issue I want to get into. And in the Fourth Lateran Council, there is a little sentence in one of the proceedings, which is called the Similitudo Clause. And the Similitudo Clause is probably one of the most important things that I know. And the Similitudo Clause, which, by the way, if it sounds close to the word similarity, it's because similitudo is exactly similarity in Latin. But the Similitudo Clause says this: when comparing creator and creature, no similarity can be posited without acknowledging the greater dissimilarity. Now, that takes a little to work it out in your head. When comparing creator and creature, no similarity can be posited without recognizing the greater dissimilarity. What is that saying? Anytime you use your imagination to try and access God, it is a good thing. It is a good thing to use your imagination. However, always remember that your imagination is never the reality. Never, ever the reality. You have to enter into using your imagination, remembering that the actual state of God is infinitely more than what you are able to imagine. And so the possibilities, for example, at the crucifixion was something that Mary had no sense of the plan that God had. Mary didn't have any sense of, oh yeah, he's dead, but he's going to rise from the dead. I know. Everybody knows that. It's like a little kid. The other day, a mom told me, this little kid, that when I did the consecration, the little kid turned to her and said, Mommy, Jesus just died, but that's okay. He comes back. Comes back at communion time. Mary had no sense of that. Can you imagine what it was like on Holy Saturday? Everybody, all the apostles feeling guilty for having run away, confused. Mary having to look. I don't know if Mary was gathered with them on Holy Saturday, but if she was, she would have been teed off. She would have been looking at these disciples and going, yeah, these are his friends. They all deserted him. And the despair. And can you imagine having to sit there and inside her say, I trust you. I trust you. That's the issue. So, let me start landing this plane. What are you supposed to do? Because let me tell you, you're going to be in situations like that. There's going to be things that you're going to be praying for that are crucial. And many of them, God will say yes to. But I always like what a good friend of mine says. God never says no. God has one of three responses for every prayer. Yes, not yet, and I have a better idea. Yes, not yet, and I have a better idea. And there's going to be one day when you're going to be praying for something that you really want, and it's not going to happen. And then you're going to get that choice. Because unconsciously you said, you love me, God, right? And you know I need this to be happy, right? Right. So you're going to give it to me. Not yet, or I have a better idea. And your tendency is going to be the same tendency as that first grader. So it will be with me. I'm angry, and you did this to me. And the only option that you have, the only option that you have is to do what the Blessed Mother did. To acknowledge the fact that you don't know what is going on. That right now everything looks dark. And that in the midst of that darkness, even though you cannot see the future, you can't even imagine the future, you're going to have to say, I don't understand, but I trust you. It's the only way out. You see, folks, Christianity is not a set of beliefs that you walk around and say, I'm a Catholic because I go to church and I believe these things. You may believe them, but ultimately Christianity is an act of trust, given these beliefs, it's an act of trust, an act of reasoned trust in the God who's in control. And that's the ultimate in what will be asked of all of us. I don't understand, but I trust you.